Chapter 47. 7 years, 7 great purposes, Gavin. Gavin held his right hand out and counted up from his thumb, drafting each colour in turn, thumb to pinky, to ring finger, to middle finger, to index finger, back to middle, to ring, to pinky. A 7 count, each colour in turn, from sub-red to super-violet, feeling the little thread of emotion from each. For Hollam's sake, I'm the prism. I am the whole man, master of all colours, in my prime. Stronger than any prism in living memory, maybe the strongest for hundreds of years. Most prisms only lived 7 years after their ascension. Only 4 had made it to 21 years, always in multiples of 7. Of course, they could be killed or die of natural causes too, but none burned out except on the multiple years. Gavin had made it to 16. So he had at least 5 years left. In fact, if any prism could make it past 21 years, he would be the one to do it. He felt strong. He felt stronger and more in control of his colours than he had in his whole life. Of course, it could all be an illusion. He'd been exceptional in other ways. Perhaps he'd pitch over and die tomorrow. He felt that familiar tightness in his chest again at the thought. He wasn't afraid of death, but he was afraid of dying before he accomplished his purposes. He stood outside his father's apartments in the prism's tower. His father's slave, Gavin knew the man's name was Grinwoody, though it was rude to use a slave's name if they didn't reveal it to you themselves, was waiting, holding the door open. It was a door into darkness, of more than one kind. There was sharp pain in Gavin's chest. It was hard to breathe. Andros Gyle didn't know Gavin wasn't Gavin. He didn't know his elder son was rotting under the Chromeria. He thought Dazen was dead, and he'd never seemed concerned about it, much less sorry. Traitors were to be dismissed and never spoken of. "Lord Prism?" the slave asked. Gavin shook the last tendrils of Luxin from his fingers, the waft of resinous smells a small comfort. Andros Gyle's room was kept completely dark. Thick velvet drapes had been hung over the windows, then the whole wall hung with more of the same in layers. An entry chamber had been erected around the entrance so that light from the hallway wouldn't come in with his few visitors. Gavin drew in superviolet light and then stepped into the entry. Grinwoody pulled the door shut behind them. Gavin drew a little ball of superviolet into his hand, drafted imperfectly so it would be unstable. The instability caused it to slowly disintegrate back into the light of its own spectrum. For a superviolet drafter, it was like carrying a torch whose light was invisible to everyone else. Neither Grinwoody nor Andros was a superviolet, so Gavin could have as much of the eerie violet light as he wanted. As Gavin watched, Grinwoody pushed a heavy pillow in front of the slight crack at the bottom of the door behind them. The man paused, letting his eyes become used to the darkness. He wasn't a drafter, so he couldn't directly control his eyes. In darkness, it took a non-drafter, half an hour or more to reach full sensitivity to light. Most drafters naturally could do it in 10 minutes just from spending so much time attuned to light. A few could reach full light sensitivity in seconds. But Grinwoody wasn't trying to see. He had obviously memorized the layout of the room years ago. He was simply making sure he wasn't allowing any light into High Master Guile's chamber. Finally, satisfied, he opened the door. Gavin was glad to be holding superviolet. Like all drafters, he'd been taught not to rely on colours to change his moods. Like most, he failed often. It was a particular temptation for polychromes. There was a colour for every feeling, or to counteract every feeling, like right now. Using the superviolet spectrum was attended by a sense of remove or alienation or otherness. Sometimes it seemed ironic or cynical. Always it was like looking down at himself from above. You're the prism, and you're afraid of an old man. In the superviolet light of his torch, Gavin saw his father sitting in a high-backed, padded chair, turned toward a covered, boarded-up window. Andros Gyle had been a tall, powerfully built man. Now his weight had dropped from his broad shoulders to form a little ball in his paunch. It wasn't corpulent, it was just that what weight he had was in his gut. His arms and legs had grown thin from years spent hardly moving from that chair, his skin loose and spotted already at 65.
"Son, so good of you to come visit. An old man grows lonely."
"I'm sorry, Father. The white keeps me very busy."
"You shouldn't be so supine with that wheeled wench. You should arrange for the hag to join the freeing this year."
Gavin let that pass without comment. It was an old argument. The white said the same things about Andros, minus the derogation. Gavin sat beside his father and studied him in the eerie superviolet light of his torch. Despite the absolute darkness of the room, Andros Guile wore blackened spectacles moulded tight around his eye sockets. Gavin couldn't imagine living in utter darkness. He hadn't even done that to his brother. Andros Guile had been a yellow to sub-red polychrome. Like so many other drafters during the False Prisms War, he'd pushed himself to his absolute limit. And beyond. He'd fought, of course, for his eldest son. Using too much magic, he'd finally destroyed his body's defences against it. But after the war, when so many drafters had taken the freeing, Andros had instead withdrawn to these rooms. When Gavin had first come to visit Andros here, there had been blue filters set on the windows. With his own power at the opposite end of the spectrum, Andros had felt safe with blue light. Since then, the Chirurgeons had told him he needed complete darkness if he was to keep fighting the colours. If he was taking such extreme precautions, he must be very close to the brink indeed.
"I hear you're trying to start a war," Andros said.
"I rarely try without succeeding, I'm afraid," Gavin said. He didn't bother marvelling that his father already knew. Of course Andros Guile knew. The man owned the loyalty or the fear of half of the most powerful women and men in the Tower.
"How?"
"I received a letter that I had a natural son in Tyria. When I arrived, the town was burning. I stumbled across some mirror men about to murder a child, and I stopped them."
"Killed them?"
"Yes. The child turned out to be my natural son, and the men turned out to be Ras Cardools. He was making an example of the town for refusing to send levies. He claimed a special interest in the boy, but I'm not sure if that was just because he thought it would hurt me."
"A special interest? I thought he was there to punish the village."
"He said Kip had stolen something from him."
"And had he?"
"The boy claimed his mother had given him a jewellery case just before dying from injuries she took during the attack. He didn't steal it, though."
"But you have the dagger. Is it the White Luxon?"
A chill shot down Gavin's spine. He'd thought the worst part of this interview would be his father picking through the details of affairs that Gavin hadn't actually had and thus couldn't remember. A White Luxon dagger? White Luxon wasn't possible, and for Andros Guile to speak about it like this meant he thought that it was. Or knew that it was. That he'd seen such a thing, and that he thought Gavin should know what he was talking about. His brother had mentioned a dagger, too. Gavin's chest tightened. If he wasn't very careful, he was going to ruin his disguise. This was why he avoided his father as much as possible. Andros Guile was one of the few people who would know exactly which memories Gavin would have and which Dazen would have. Others who knew had been alienated or killed during the war. The feeble excuse that the severity of the brothers' fight to the death had made Gavin forget things would only go so far. Andros, in particular, might forgive him for misremembering things that happened in the run-up to the final battle, but surely Gavin would remember things that had happened years earlier, wouldn't he? "I didn't see the dagger," Gavin said. "It was in a box. It didn't even occur to me it might be the White Luxon." White Luxon was impossible. Gavin would know. He'd tried to make the mythic material himself, and as a prism he would be the one who was able to do it if it could be done at all.
"Idiot boy. I don't know why I always favoured you. Dazen was smarter by half. But I always took your side, didn't I?"
Gavin looked at the ground and nodded. The first kind word he'd heard from his father about himself in years, and it was delivered as a rebuke.
"Are you nodding your head or shaking it? In case you'd forgotten, I'm blind,"
Andros said bitterly.
Never mind. I understand your own secrecy in hunting the dagger. Even my spies haven't heard of you bumbling about, so bravo for that. But when you stumbled across a suspicious dagger that some halfpenny king wanted badly, that didn't send shivers up the back of your neck?
I was surrounded by 30 hostile drafters, mirror men, and an extremely put-out king. I had plenty of shivers. Andros Guile waved his hand, like none of that was worth considering.
With no blackguards guarding you, I suppose. Stubborn fool boy. What was the box made of?
Rosewood, maybe? Gavin said honestly.
Rosewood.
Andros Guile sighed deeply.
Alone it proves nothing, of course, but it tells you what you have to do.
I was planning to rally the 7 satrapies, speak to each directly, see if I could sway them, Gavin said. The spectrum, of course, will do nothing. He knew how this went. His father would announce what Gavin would do and run right over everything Gavin threw in his path. For Hollum's sake, I'm the prism.
And by the time you've done that, King Haradul will have taken Garriston. You were right in everything you told the spectrum, though you drew the wrong lesson and the wrong course of action, which is why you have me. If you had spoken with me as soon as you returned, I'd have told you this. By withdrawing unilaterally and giving a jewel into Tyrian hands...
Hardly a jewel, Father.
You dare interrupt! Come here!
Woodenly, Gavin sat across from his father. Andros Guile extended a hand and found Gavin's face. He traced Gavin's cheek almost gently. Then he drew his open hand back and cracked it across Gavin's cheek.
I am your father, and you will give me the respect you owe me. Understood?
Gavin trembled, swallowed, mastered himself. Understood, father. Andros Guile's chin lifted as if he was sifting Gavin's tone for anything displeasing. Then, as if nothing had happened, he continued.
Haradul covets Garriston, so even if it's a tower of feces built on a plain of ordure, giving it to him is weakness. The right course would be to raise the city and slave the inhabitants and sow the fields with salt, and leave before he arrived. But you've destroyed that option with your incompetence. And once King Haradul holds Garriston with 20,000 men, he'll find it a lot harder to take back than he's going to find it to take when only 1,000 are holding it.
The Hrothgari only have 1,000 men holding Garriston? Gavin asked. It was less than a skeleton crew. If he hadn't been in such a hurry when he sculled through Garriston, he surely would have noticed.
Troubles with the Abornians hiking the tariff to travel through the Narrows again. The Hrothgari are making a statement with a show of force. They pulled the ships and most of the soldiers from Garriston.
That's moronic. They have to know Haradul is massing troops.
I agree. I think the Hrothgari foreign minister has been suborned. She's smart. She must know what she's doing. Regardless, you must go to Garriston. Save the city. Kill Rask Haradul. But even if you fail those, get that dagger. Everything rests on that.
What? Everything? Here was the problem with pretending to know secrets you didn't know. Secrets, especially big, dangerous secrets, tended to be referred to obliquely, especially when the conspirators' new spies were frequently eavesdropping on them. Maybe I should have taken my chances with claiming to have forgotten what the dagger was. There had been a time when Daisen had known all of Gavin's secrets, even those that were supposed to be just between Gavin and their father. Daisen and Gavin hadn't just been brothers. They'd been best friends. Though Daisen was 2 years younger, Gavin treated him like an equal. Sebastian was younger. They made him stay home. Gavin and Daisen had the same friends. Together they won and lost fist fights against the White Oak brothers. Gavin missed the simplicity of those fights. Two sides, lots of fists, and once one side started bleeding or crying, the fight was over. But Gavin had changed on the day he turned 13. Daisen was not yet 11 at the time. Andros Guile had come in his dress, robes looming, impressive in red-gold brocade and red-gold chains around his neck. Even then, after having been a member of the Spectrum for a decade, Andros Guile had always been referred to as Andros Guile, never Andros Red. Everyone had always known which was the more important. Andros had taken Gavin away. When Gavin came back the next morning, his eyes were swollen like he had been crying, though he angrily denied it when Dazen asked. Whatever had happened, Gavin was never the same. He was a man, now, he told Dazen, and he refused to play with him. When the White Oak brothers tried to pick a fight, Gavin filled himself with such deep sub-red that the heat emanated from him in waves, and he quietly told the brothers that if they attacked him, the result would be on their own heads. In that moment, Dazen knew Gavin really would have killed them too. From then on, Gavin had spoken to their father as a confidant. Dazen had been left to fall by the wayside. For a time he'd played with Sebastian. Then Sebastian was taken too, and he'd been alone. Dazen had hoped, when he turned 13, he'd be welcomed back into their graces, but his father had barely acknowledged the date. When it came time for it to be divined whom Orholm had chosen to be his next prism, all of Big Jasper and Little Jasper was a whirl of speculation, but Dazen knew his older brother was the one. How it happened didn't matter. Andros had been grooming Gavin to be prism for his whole life. And I was groomed to be nothing. A cast-off to marry Caris Whiteoak or some other girl to deflect some other father's ambitions, until Gavin tried to take even that from me. The hardest part of maintaining his disguise was here, not in pretending to be Gavin, but in being reminded of all Gavin had had and that Dazen never would. So, go to Garriston, save it or burn it, kill Caradul and get the dagger. Sounds simple enough. If Gavin did things right, that would fulfill one of his purposes and set the stage for another. Andros said,
I'll give you letters to the Hrothgari to make sure they'll obey you.
You're going to make me the governor of Garriston? Every time Gavin forgot how powerful his father was, even from this little room, Andros did something to remind him.
Not officially. If you fail, it would besmirch our name. But I'm making sure that the governor does whatever you tell him.
But the spectrum
can, on occasion, be ignored. It's so not easy to depose a prism, you know. When you return, we'll talk about getting you married. It's time you start making heirs. You showing up with a bastard presses the issue.
Father, I'm not—
If you crush one of the satraps, even a rebel one, you're going to need to buy off one of the others. It's time. You will obey me in this. We'll talk about the bastard problem later.